You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast. What a broadcast it is, this Saturday evening, the 18th of May. We give Saturday Night Live a whole new meaning here on TPC, especially during our march around the world, and we just spent an hour in Belgium with both, not just one, but two of our people's finest elected leaders, Philip de Winter and Anke van der Meersch, appearing in tandem that first hour. Very unique interview, and we leave Belgium this hour and travel even a little further north still into Scandinavia, where they're waiting is my old friend Dan Eriksson. He is a native Swede married to a German woman, and now that's the kind of diversity I can get behind, and together they have two children. He is the chairman of Sweden's largest ethno-nationalist organization, the Free Sweden, as well as of Europa Terra Nostra, an organization to which I belong as a member. Europa Terra Nostra is a project that attempts to bring European nationalists together and build bridges between European nations that have been plagued by old conflicts. Dan also runs a daily podcast now for more than 10 years, and is a board member of Scandinavia's largest alternative publishing house, Logic. He is a man of many talents and a man who has his hands in many pies, and he's joining us now again from Sweden. Dan, it's always good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me, James. I've been looking forward to this. It was, I think, maybe 2 years ago last time I was on your show, so I'm really happy to be back here.
I was just looking at that because I was looking at it for Philip's sake, and he last appeared 2 years ago, which was the same March Around the World series that that you appeared on. So it was 2 years ago, a year too long, if I do say so myself, but it's great to have you back tonight. We've got a lot to cover with you this hour. So I just want to start with this on the heels of the appearances that we had, the joint appearance between Philip and Anke that we had in the first hour. Europa Terra Nostra, bridging this divide between European nationalists. You're uniquely, I think, qualified, Dan, to speak because you've had a past in politics as well in your early days, in your youth, to speak on what parties do you think really are doing a great job in Europe for our people? Obviously, we just spoke with two representatives for Vlaams Belang, but beyond Belgium, you have the National Rally in France, the Lega Nord in Italy, the Forum for Democracy, for the Dutch, the Freedom Party of Austria, the Alternative for Germany, the Finns Party, Conservative People's Party of Estonia. We'll talk about the Swedish Democrats in a moment. But of those parties, I mean, they all sort of get labeled right wing, et cetera, et cetera. Which ones really are?
Well, something I've learned, I've been traveling Europe for 15, almost 20 years, speaking at different conferences, building networks, trying to get to know people and different parties and organizations. And it's clear to me that you can't really compare a party in, for example, Greece with a party in Finland. Because
exactly what Philip said in the first hour. Yep.
Yeah, because we are culturally different. We have different political history. We have different... We all have problems with immigration, globalism, and so on, but we also have national problems that are different. So it's easy to sit in one country and complain about a nationalist party in another country having the wrong foreign policy or the wrong view on this thing in the European Union. But usually they always have their reasons for that. And we are not, I mean, we are all Europeans, but we are many different nations with different history and old conflicts and so on. So therefore, our politics also look a bit different. And I have the uttermost respect for what Philip de Winter and Vlaams Belang and previously Vlaams Blok are doing. And looking at what's happening right now in Italy is inspiring. Of course, I would say both Lega and Fratelli d'Italia, they are both parties where I could criticize on certain issues, but seeing parties with that kind of history and still with a nationalist rhetoric being in power in Italy is really, really inspiring. And of course, we should not forget the part, I mean, what's happening in Hungary, to some extent also in Poland, which shows that all around Europe, different right-wing or nationalist or patriot or conservative parties are gaining traction. And that's really, really inspiring. So I would not say, and also I have to be a bit diplomatic, of course, with Europa Terra Nostra, that I favor really one party over another. I do believe there are some really good people in all of the European nations working for the best of their people and of the whole European continent, but they're doing it in different ways. And I also do believe that a Flemish person knows best what's best for the Flemish people. And I can't understand every nuance of what's going on in their country. So I just have to sit back, listen, try to understand what their issues are and be inspired by how they are organizing stuff. And when you talk about Flams Belang, for example, the success that they have had during the years, and also even when they were facing the party being banned, they found a way through it and still could have a successful election. So really,
and they're
really
rising.
Stuff.
I mean, we talked about that long sustained success, both by Philip and Anka, but also by the party in general. I mean, both of them, she's been in there for 20 years and him much longer than that, you know, as an elected official. So it's just for us as Americans to see people like that holding those offices for so long and the party gaining in popularity and this coalition of other parties. As you mentioned, there's a lot of differences between the different European nations. It's not like America, where you do have your regional differences, of course, but ultimately we all sink or swim, you know, unfortunately, together right now. But I'm hoping for a Balkanization one day. That's a separate issue.
It will come, I'm sure. But I mean, in Sweden and in America, yeah.
Well, and you know, the whole this is an aside, but the whole history of Belgium is of course very interesting in that Flanders is basically a semi-autonomous nation within a nation, and that's just a whole separate topic of conversation. But they do have a very unique situation there that perhaps some of the other European nations can't relate to. But we're not just getting an opinion on this from Dan Erickson. We're getting a very informed opinion because, Dan, you have lived, not just visited and traveled throughout Europe, but have actually lived in, what, four different European nations?
Right. So I've lived, except for in Sweden, I've lived in Lithuania. So that's in the Baltics. And then in Denmark, our neighbors and former enemies in the south. And I've lived more than 10 years in Germany. I was supposed to stay there for 1 year because of work. But then I met a woman who pretty soon became my wife. And I had to stay for a few more years in Germany. But we have moved back to Sweden now. So now I'm back at home, and I need to do that to live here to be able to really work also with my Swedish organization. I've been trying to do that, you know, on distance, but it's quite complicated.
We are going to plug all of those organizations. This has just been, I use the same adjectives, I guess, over and over, but wonderful. I mean, that would certainly be one. This series this month with all of the different people we featured, Dan Erickson. So happy to have him back tonight. And we'll have him for this hour. And so stay tuned. Much more to come. We've got a lot more to get into with Dan. Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, the Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. That's antelopehillpublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to antelopehillpublishing.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Dan Erickson from Sweden, our guest this hour. He serves as the chairman of Europa Terra Nostra, an organization that exists to foster understanding, friendship, and cooperation between Europeans at a national and international level. Anytime I talk to Dan, I get excited. He's just a guy that I really relate to on a lot of different levels. We're in the same season of life, just about the same age, married with children and fighting for our people. So, and you know, Dan, after all the years you've been involved in this, your entire adult life, as I have as well, we've done a lot of things. I've done a lot of interviews over the years, but I will tell you this, and this is the truth. When I think back on those first couple of interviews that I did with you and your co-host on the broadcast that you were with at that time, it had to be a decade ago if it was a day. Those are two that still stand out to me in terms of the ones that I enjoyed the very most throughout my career thus far. Do you remember those?
I do, and I'm happy to hear that. Actually, we had a quite big event last weekend, and one of the guests came to me and started to talk about you and that interview
just
a week ago.
Me.
So I think it's 8 or 9 years ago. Yeah, it's amazing. So not only you and me liked it, apparently the listeners as well remember that conversation.
Well, this is what I get so excited about in this series, and this is what you've dedicated a lot of your calling to, is fostering cooperation and kinship amongst the various European nations and the European people groups. And again, it is very intricate. It is, in fact, for Americans, I think, almost sometimes confusing. You look at Belgium. Anke and Philip consider themselves to be part of the Flemish people, which is almost a nation within a nation in Belgium, although they are, you know, seated in the Belgian government. And Belgium itself is a relatively new nation. I asked Philip about that, not tonight, but in one of his previous interviews. And I said, what can you tell us about the history of Belgium? And the first thing he said was, we're an artificial nation. And I was thinking to myself, well, that's not a very flattering thing to say, but it's true. I think Belgium itself was carved out in the 1800s as a buffer zone to keep France and Germany from each other's throats, if I'm not mistaking my European history there. So there are a lot of different issues that affect the different nation groups in Europe. And but we all one people at the end of the day.
Absolutely, but European history is so complicated. I mean, just look at the 20th century in Europe and all the, I mean, we had the two big world wars, of course, but also all the changing borders and which people lived on which land. So you had, of course, 1945, but also 1989, and then you have the Yugoslavian wars and everything happening there. And I mean, that's just the last century. European history is really, really complicated, and it means that there are also many people belonging to one nation but living in a different state. And some of the people, like the Flemish, don't even have their own state. There are European people living inside Europe without their own state. So Europe is complicated in that way. And for me and Europa Terra Nostra, this is, of course, something you have to try to navigate carefully, because they all have their old conflicts and still ongoing conflicts. And maybe a Belgian nationalist or patriot have a problem with Flemish nationalists, usually not that much anymore, but that could absolutely be be a thing. And when you start to speak about Germans and Poles or Romanians and Hungarians, you get into really, really fresh wounds. And I mean, what the Germans did to the Poles, and then what the Poles did to the Germans, and you know, they're blaming each other, and everybody has a grandmother or some other relative who were treated badly by the other group. So it's complicated, but our goal is to just get these people to start off, get them first in a phone call, and then get them on this, at the same table, share a meal together, speak, and usually, at least on an individual level, we find out that we have a lot in common. We are European. Most of us are Christian. We are white. We belong to the same history in many ways, and we also face not the same, but at least similar problems. And we will benefit a lot more on cooperating than keep on fighting each other.
That's absolutely right. And yes, the old wounds and the old histories, they can stay. I'm not saying necessarily disregard all of that, but what a luxury it was when we only had each other to fight. I mean, now yeah. We're fighting for the very survival. I say that in jest, of course, but now we're fighting for our very survival. I do want to talk to you, Dan, about the situation in Sweden, your home nation, the nation which you represent on this series this year. But to the topic that we're discussing right now and the essential purpose of Europa Terra Nostra, let me give everybody the website right now. It's Europa Terra Nostra. That's ETNostra.com. That is E-T and then N-O-S. T-R-A. If you go to the top of our website, my Twitter handle, you can link right over to it. But an essential purpose of this organization is to serve as a networking platform for European nationalists. We've mentioned that. But it's about strengthening a shared European consciousness, overcoming these historical burdens and exchanging experiences and coordinating a resistance against globalism. That's the passion that you have, Dan, and the passion of your organization is to develop and popularize new ideas, strategies, and tactics to advance the overarching goal of preserving, celebrating, and advancing European heritage and ethnic identities. I mean, that's the thing. We've got to see each other as a collective. And I mentioned this with our guest in the previous hour. Far too often, white Europeans, whatever, whites in America, whites in Australia, whites in Canada, whites in New Zealand, whites wherever, see themselves as individuals. We have to see ourselves as a collective. We are one European family, whether you're from Sweden, whether you're from Spain, whether you're from Greece, whether you're from the United Kingdom and any of the nations of that island, whether you're from America or wherever, we are one people, and there are more that brings us together than divides us.
No, I absolutely agree, and my understanding over the last 10 years or so, we founded Europa Terra Nostra in 2015, and since then, I see many European nationalists understanding this and coming to the same conclusions. Of course, the ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine is complicating stuff, but I do believe that an organization like Europa Terra Nostra is more important than ever when we have a war on European soil, because this is the kind of things that can put nationalists against nationalists all over Europe. And we are trying to prevent that, trying to talk to all sides of the spectrum, what people think about this war and what's going on, and trying to make people understand that we have such an important thing that we have to do together that we don't have time to fight each other. And I think that has changed the last 10 years. Especially when it comes to the former Eastern Europe, which of course they only became free or semi-free nation states in 89 or 91. And they have had a shorter amount of time to develop their modern nationalist ideology. And therefore it's a bit more complex. But they are more and more adopting a European identity, which I think is very important. It's not replacing their national identity, but it's like, you know, it's another identity that you have as well, this shared European identity. And I see that becoming more and more of a thing also in the former East.
I want to talk to you about the situation before we end this hour in between Russia and Ukraine, obviously now beyond a year into this situation, and how you see it from your lens and perspective in Scandinavia. But, well, we have about a minute remaining, and it's a little bit too little time to get into what I want to ask you about, and that's I'll give people a preview of what's coming up. When we come back with Dan Erickson, we're going to talk to him more about the situation in his own nation, Sweden, with regards to the government there. The Swedish Democrats, who we heard a lot about last year. I can remember talking with Henrik Palmgren about them last year on this program, and he was cautiously optimistic about how that might turn out. Did it pan out the way we hoped? Why? Why not? We'll find out from Dan in just a moment. But while we're on the topic, I just want to plug it again very quickly while we have this this time. etnostra.com. And again, an essential purpose of this organization is to network, serve as a networking platform for European nationalists, strengthening that shared consciousness, popularizing ideas, strategies, and tactics to bring our people together. I don't know if there is any organization out there that has a cause more noble than that. The old saying, we have to all hang together, or we will surely hang separately. This is this issue of globalism and rampant replacement is something that affects us all, and nobody is going to be able to withstand it unless we bind together. You don't want to be the one that the alligator eats last, so you still get eaten. Let's join together and bring our nationalists of European descent together. That's what Dan's working on. We'll talk to him about the situation in Sweden when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Richard Johnson. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says we have nothing to worry about when it comes to the safety of our money.
Our banking system is sound, and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them.
Yellen also told a Senate panel President Biden's ready to work with lawmakers on reforming Social Security. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy isn't buying that.
That's a lie, because when a bipartisan group of senators has repeatedly requested to meet with him about social, we have not heard anything on our request.
Banking anxiety may be fueling another recession. Economists at Goldman Sachs now say there's a 35% chance the USA will experience a recession in the next year. That's 10% more than the firm's prediction before the fall of Silicon Valley Bank. A video from that U.S. drone that was harassed and clipped by a Russian fighter jet shows a bent propeller and the Russian jet spraying the drone with jet fuel. NBC correspondent Courtney Kuby says military sources told her generally harassing U.S. planes is something the Kremlin has signed off on.
They say it is most likely that the actual clipping of the drones was an accident based off of the erratic pilot, the way that the pilot was operating here, and some words that we're hearing like reckless behavior and even ineptitude on the part of the Russian pilots here. But the very high levels of the Russian government, civilian government, not just military, approved of this aggressive behavior.
Both Russian and U.S. recovery teams are in the Black Sea, despite the very slim chance of finding the drone in 700 feet of water. Los Angeles is bracing for a possible three-day strike by teachers and others next week, what would be the first strike there in 30 years. 12 solid hours of college basketball is underway. The first round of the NCAA men's basketball tournament features games all day and half the night, today and tomorrow. This is USA News.
Non-attorney spokesperson, ad sponsored by Openjar Concepts. Attention veterans and active duty military. If you were issued earplugs between 2002 and 2016 and were diagnosed with hearing loss or ringing in the ears, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer of these military earplugs recently paid $9.1 million to resolve claims that their earplugs were defective, potentially exposing service members to damaging sound levels that could have resulted in hearing loss or tinnitus. If you or a loved one were issued earplugs and were diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss, don't wait. You fought for this country, and our attorneys want to fight for you. Call 800-958-2145 now for a free legal consultation and to see if you may be eligible to file a claim. Time restrictions may apply, and you pay nothing unless there's a recovery in your favor. So call 800-958-2145 now. Again, 800-958-2145.
That's 800-958-2145.
All right. Having way too much fun to be able to call this work, I'm James Edwards back with Dan Erickson. In the third and final hour, Keith Alexander the Great will be back with me. We're going to take another pause from our international travels and catch up on some news in our third hour. But my goodness, after Philip DeWinter and Anka van der Merse and Dan Erickson, where else can you go tonight? You go to bed. I mean, the work is done. It cannot be improved upon. But let's talk to Dan about Sweden. So, Dan, the new Swedish government, you write, since last autumn, they call it a center-right government that's supported by the Sweden Democrats. Now, that could be, again, confusing to Americans. Over here, the Democrats are the woke. Over there, they're supposed to be or were billed as sort of a right-wing populist nationalist party. This is the first time, reading from your notes again, Dan, that the Swedish Democrats had a part of the ruling coalition, but the result has been a disappointment so far. So let's talk about the background of the Sweden Democrats, the stances that they have put forth today, as well as what this ruling coalition has said that they wanted to do, and what they probably will and won't do before their reign is up for another review of the voters. As I said in the last segment, when Henrik Palmgren was on last year, right after the Swedish Democrats sort of were thrust into this position, he was cautiously optimistic. What's going on there, Dan?
Well, so the Sweden Democrats, they were founded in 1988 as a true nationalist party. They and the whole, like, the end of the 80s, the 1990s, they were a very small group. Of course, this was also the time when there were a lot of skinheads around, so they had the demonstrations with skinheads, and, you know, it looked like many other of these kind of movements in the 90s. In the start of the new millennia, they tried to change their image a bit, but still remaining nationalist. In 2005, they got a new leadership, which is still the leadership of the party, and they once again tried to turn the party in a different direction. So they started calling themselves social conservative with a nationalist viewpoint or something in that way. But, I mean, still, for the regular Swede, they have been the party you go vote for when you want to protest mass immigration. In 2010, they came into parliament for the first time with around 5% of the votes. Last election, they got around 20% of the votes, became the second biggest party, and now became a part of this ruling coalition together with the Liberal Party, the Christian Democrats, and the Moderate Party. They are not a part of the government, but they are like a support party for the government. Without the Sweden Democrats, this government wouldn't get a majority in the parliament. So it's a very powerful position that they have. They can more or less say yes or no to anything, and that will be the final decision in the parliament. So when this new government was formed in October last year, they presented a document, an agreement on what they were going to do the coming 4 years. And there were some really good stuff in that. You could clearly see what the Sweden Democrats have been pushing for, like zero immigration, an increased repatriation of non-integratable migrants, you could say. There were also some other stuff that would promote Swedish culture, to criminalize anti-Swedish offenses in different ways. In Sweden, we have this kind of racism or hate crime laws, but Swedes are not protected by them, just all other groups. Or if you're a homosexual Swede, you're protected by it. Or a transsexual Swede. But not if you're like just a regular Swede who don't do weird stuff. So they wanted to include Swedes also in this hate crime law and so on, make us equal in the law. But now, almost half a year later, it's quite clear that, because I was quite optimistic at the time, because the agreement looked good. There were some things I didn't like, but I also understand that you have to play ball. If you want to be a part of a coalition, you have to give the others some questions that they like, and maybe you can get some of your questions through. So far, I have seen nothing of the politics from the Sweden Democrats. To me, it looks like they have been played. You know, they are amateurs at this. The other ones have been in government many times before. So when you look closely into the agreement, all the points that the Sweden Democrats wanted to get through, they are like buried in different investigations, and there will be a committee looking at that and so on.
Is it a situation where they're not being insincere, they just got outmaneuvered, or did they, in your opinion, never really believe in the things that they were running on?
I would say mostly they've been outmaneuvered.
Okay. Well, I guess that's also maybe better than the alternative. Maybe they can learn and do better next time. That's better than just being a sellout, which so many of our people running on our issues have been, especially here in America.
Absolutely. The only thing that I would like to see from them now is that they start also, putting their foot down and saying, "This is not. We will not tolerate this anymore." In January, we still had record migration. Then they've been in power for a few months. You can get new policies and laws through. That's not a problem. They have the majority in the parliament. They can get anything through except changing the constitution. For that, you need 2/3 of the parliament. But what you have seen instead is a push for getting us into NATO. What you have seen instead is new laws to restrict free speech, also for Swedes, the freedom of assembly, freedom of organizations. All of this under the impression that it's about fighting terrorism. I guess as an American, you know this very well with the Patriot Act and so on. So it's all about fighting terrorism. But if you look into the laws that could easily be used against a nationalist organization growing too strong, for example. In Sweden, we have for European standards, we have a high level of freedom of speech and also freedom of organizations. You can't ban an organization in Sweden like you can in Germany or United Kingdom, for example, or a political party. That's protected in our constitution. But now they are changing the constitution. Of course, they're getting the left-wing parties with them to say that you can ban an organization if this organization is involved in terrorism. And there is no explaining or detailing what terrorism means. So this can, of course, be used to silence or ban your political opponents if you say that they threaten democracy or they whatever. In just a few months, they've been able to push these laws, but they have not been able to stop immigration, which was why people were voting for them. So it's been a disappointment so far. They still have 3.5 years, I'm not holding my breath waiting for them to to do something good.
Well, I guess in essence it's still a good thing that they ran and they were met with some support, and perhaps they'll become a little bit more savvy in the way things operate going forward. But you also tell me, Dan, that more and more Swedish commentators from the entirety of the political spectrum, not just the right, are giving up on the idea of integration and talking about the self-selected segregation as the natural order. I mean, that's pretty incredible. What's going on there?
That's really, really interesting. What I believe is happening is that it's becoming so clear to everyone that the idea of integration of 3 million non-Europeans into a population of 7 million Swedes, it's just impossible. They will not just become Swedish by coming here. And there was actually a big name inside the Social Democrats, the biggest left-wing party, the biggest party in Sweden, which has been the ruling party for almost 100 years, that he wrote just last week that we politicians keep on talking about integration, but when people decide themselves, they always choose segregation. And there are some politicians, especially on the left wing, who want some kind of forced integration, like busing Swedish students to immigrant schools or forcing immigrants to move to a more Swedish area to make the whole Sweden more mixed, because Sweden is very segregated today. But the immigrants, doesn't matter if they are from Somalia or from Iraq, they of course want to live with their own people, where, you know, they know the language, the culture, they have their local mosque or church or whatever religion they are into. And the Swedes, as soon as they have the possibility, and they move away, you know, the white flight syndrome. So you see this from the Social Democrats. You also see it from the conservative. And when I say conservative, there's this liberal conservative style, that, like the moderate party in Sweden, who also now are talking about that it seems like people don't want this integration, so let's not force it on them. Instead, give them tools to segregate if they want to. And to me, this is a very positive thing. Of course, I would love Sweden to be totally Swedish. The thing is, the last 50 years, the mass immigration has destroyed this possibility. So the next best solution is at least to give Swedes the possibility to segregate and live among our own.
Yeah, that's a similar situation with the American South. We existed that way and thrived for a long time. And it wasn't a terrible, wasn't ideal, but it wasn't the most terrible. It's certainly better than what we've got now, that's for sure. Let's continue with this one more segment with Dan Erickson in another hour that's going by far too quickly.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas, like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
I think that my family has always had a big influence on me for not smoking, because since I was little, I was taught that smoking was wrong.
Recent studies indicate that smoking among teens often leads to the use of alcohol and other drugs.
I think having faith in God is a big part in it, because the way I was raised has helped to avoid smoking.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Small Business Tech Guides is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguides.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguides.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Perhaps the most important question I will field to any guest tonight. And I asked this of Henrik Palmgren. You know, Henrik and yours truly, and you as well, Dan, we're all about the same age. We're all married with a couple, three kids. And I asked Henrik on one of his many appearances on this show his opinion of Ace of Base, which is, of course, obviously the pride of Sweden. Do you have an opinion on Ace of Base? Where do you weigh in on the Ace of Base question?
I don't know why you turned down the music. I was dancing here.
I tell you what, when I was in seventh,
legendary.
When I was in seventh grade, that was the biggest song in America. This is a Swedish band, three brothers and sisters and one friend, if anybody doesn't know the history. But that was the biggest song in America in the early 90s. So I could only imagine what it was like in Sweden.
But you do know that one of the guys,
the main writer,
Ulf Ekberg, was a good guy once upon a time. He was a
naturalist. Yeah, you
know,
I don't know anymore. I wonder how much his retraction and recantation is sincere. Yes, if you don't know, there's four members of Ace of Base, which is a huge European pop band out of Sweden. It really went international, global, huge, huge, huge. And that was their biggest hit. But yeah, one of the guys was, of course, alleged of having neo-Nazi sympathies, which, I mean, who isn't accused of being a neo-Nazi these days? If you're a half step to the right of Comrade Stalin, you get that. So, but back then, it was a little more damaging. But hey, they survived. He's still they're still out touring, last I heard. So anyway, so you like Ace of Base. That's a hell of a song. That's a catchy pop song.
Of course. I love Ace of Base.
All right. Well, we're all in agreement. Me, you, Henry. I'll pass it on to Henrik, though. We got another Ace of Base fan here in the house. But anyway, that's fun. You got to have a laugh from time to time. I did like the song. I'm not lying about that. But okay, so back to work, though. I want to remind you of the two organizations that Dan leads. If you're a Swedish nationalist, this is more so just for the Swedish speaking and Swedish nationals. You've got the Free Sweden, a big organization over there of Swedish nationalists. If you are a nationalist of a pan-European persuasion, even if you're an American, Europa Terra Nostra is where you want to go, etnostra.com. I'm a member. You can now join for free, although I joined when there was actually still a price tag. But it's a fantastic organization. We've been talking about it a little bit. And obviously, Dan, leading these organizations comes with their successes and their challenges as well.
Absolutely. And for the Swedish organization, last year was there was a lot of things happening. So we were featured in a documentary in the beginning of last year. And the documentary did not lie about us. It was quite an honest documentary about what we are doing. But they were also featuring, you know, terrorists like this. I don't remember his name, the guy in New Zealand who was shooting up a mosque. And, you know, they were like cutting from images of what we are doing, you know, bringing Swedish families together, celebrating our traditions and so on. And then some guy going with a machine gun in a mosque shooting innocent people.
Yeah.
And so right after this aired, we lost the insurance on our house, our headquarters, and we also lost the deal that we had with some different, where we printed our books, where we printed our t-shirts and so on. Just 1 or 2 months later, we got a letter from the Swedish tax authorities that they were going to do a tax audit for the last 3 years. So we didn't think that would be a problem because we're trying to keep our books in order, and we are tax exempt, so we don't have to pay any taxes, but we have some employees and so on, and then we have to pay taxes on that, but no sales tax and so on. But what happened when they looked through our books was that they found out, or we found out that the European Union passed a new law in 2019, which meant that we also, as a non-profit organization and tax-exempt organization, when we buy something from a foreign country, we should pay value-added tax or sales tax on that, which usually is not a thing. So we had to pay, it's around $30,000 in added tax, and we had 1 month to pay it. We had, of course, some money on our bank account, but we also have thousands of great members who all pulled together and made sure that this, what I would say, attack from the tax authorities, that they could not get to us. So we just paid it, and hopefully we will never see them again, the tax auditors. But it was quite a hard time because we lost so many business connections. They lost their insurance, and then came the tax audit. But we managed to get through all of that. And right now, you know, we have more members than ever. That's wonderful. Arranging some really big stuff and so on. Mm.
That's wonderful news, Dan. I'm glad to hear it. I mean, this adversity, everything will be thrown at us. I mean, we all know that. Any dirty trick, anything real or imagined, they will throw at you. But the fact that you've persevered, and you've done this your entire life. I mean, you've been involved since your late teens, as have I. And we've seen most everything, I guess. Neither of us have committed any crimes, so therefore we've never gone to prison. But you've been through a lot, and you've always come out, and you've always represented your people there in Sweden, our entire community throughout Europe and beyond, with integrity and with a determined resolve. And I'm glad that you shared that story with the audience, because this is the kind of guy we're talking to tonight. These are the kind of men and women that we feature on this program, people who are paying a price, and they don't back down. That's the kind of people I want to be in league with. Now, so that's the Free Sweden. And then, of course, Europa Terra Nostra. I'll mention it one more time, etnostra.com. You stand for freedom, for peace, for identity. And I think perhaps more importantly of all, against brother wars. So let's just close tonight, before you plug anything you want to plug, with just a couple of minutes remaining. The situation in Russia and Ukraine, now more than a year into it, you see this stuff over here in America. They're acting like the fact that an American drone went down, as if that's they bombed Pearl Harbor or something, which that was manipulated too. America knew that was coming. America wanted that to happen. That's just a whole other story, though. But this thing with the drone going down, I saw Lindsey Graham, the odious senator from South Carolina, saying that they have attacked our assets. They couldn't say our people or our cities or anything like that. Our asset, this unmanned drone, as if that's a Sean Hannity shrieking, the very ignorant buffoon Sean Hannity on Fox News shrieking that we must go to war with Russia now because this drone crashed. It's just, they really are provoking World War III. These neocons, these globalists, these despicable representatives of our people are wanting to go to war with one of the nations that are trying to do it right by their people, Russia. Your thoughts on what's going on over there, Dan?
Well, I would say I'm not that positive on what Russia is doing. Russia is jailing a lot of our friends. Putin has been a terrible thing for Russian nationalists. He has been good for, you know, fighting degeneracy in different ways. But Russia is a really complicated, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multicultural country, an empire more or less. But this war is devastating for everyone, and not the least the Russians and the Ukrainians dying on the battlefield, and all the civilian casualties, of course. The thing is, when it comes to Eastern Europe and the nations that used to be a part of the Soviet Union, they will never accept being a part of Russia or Russian influence sphere again, at least not this generation. So the question is quite complicated. It's easy to sit in Western Europe or in the United States or in Australia and say, just make a peace deal, and why not leave Donbas and these regions to Russia? Most of the people there are still Russian speaking, so why not? It's complicated, and if you listen to some of the Russian people with influence, like Alexander Dugin and other people as well, they also talk about Finland as a part of the Russian sphere of interest and what should really be a part of Russia. So if we accept Russia taking parts of Ukraine, we will also accept them taking Estonia or Latvia, where almost half of the people are Russian. And what about Lithuania? What about Finland? What about Poland? So I don't see this as that black and white. But what is quite clear is that the military-industrial complex, the neocons in the West, they love this. This is exactly what they wanted. And they will do anything to keep this war going on, because they can profit from it. They can test their new weapons. And they will also destroy the middle class of the whole Western world because of what's happening there. And that's, of course, perfect for politicians and others who want to control every part of your life when you become dependent on the state and on welfare, and you can't even own your own home, you're a much better servant to their socialistic ideas. So I don't see this as black and white, like there's one good side fighting a bad side. It's a really, really complicated history and situation, and it's just so disappointing and devastating to see once again Europeans killing each other. And it reminds me,
you
know, the way this stuff is happening, it reminds me of the First World War so much, and it's so sickening and saddening to see.
That is absolutely right. I appreciate that answer, by the way. I've heard, of course, some of the mixed bag on Putin. I mean, and you have a much closer perspective in Sweden than we do over here. And I know people like Ruben Kallup, who is a nationalist in the Estonian parliament, is very much, you know, anti-Putin. And he's a guy that we agree with on identity and race and things like that. I look at it. I do think that there are Russia is a defender of the Orthodox Church. It would appear as though they are. And if NATO and Washington and all of the, Biden and all of these people are against Russia, is it a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend? I lean that way as an American. But of course, over there, as you said, it's a totally different perspective for some of these other European nations. And it's, again, quite complicated. But I think the main thing we want to drive home is no more brothers wars. And we have brothers in Ukraine as well. Zelensky's a whole other issue. We didn't even touch on that. But anyway, Dan Erickson, etnostra.com, Europa Terra Nostra. Dan, you have made for a riveting guest, as you always do when we speak, and I can't wait to do it again. My best to your family.